Well, it's nice to see such a great crowd here. Thanks for coming, everyone. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Professor John Nimitch, who is a professor of Indian philosophy at the University of Virginia in the USA, and who teaches courses on philosophy and Indian culture and religion. And he's produced two very fine volumes of Indian Kashmir philosopher, Somananda, his vision of Shiva, Shiva Drishti. I can't remember the translation, the title, but Shiva Drishti. And he's also written on narrative traditions, Sanskrit narrative traditions. And so it's great that he was able to come here to share his work with us and be with us for a term. And today he's going to give us a lecture entitled Sleep, Perception and Other Problems, Somananda's Arguments Against the Dualist Nyayayakas. So without more ado, I'll hand it over to you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for inviting me. I'm very honored to be here. And it's third week. I did an MPhil here back in the 90s. And I love being here, but I love being back more. It's really just such a wonderful, vibrant community, and I'm really profiting from it, so thank you. The material I have today, so I've given a handout, and it's very long, but I'm not going to talk about everything in it. I just felt the need to give you the material and the evidence for what I want to say. So I'm going to try and give you a long handout, but not speak too long, because we only have 50 minutes, and I want to leave some time for discussion. Before that, this is the second volume. I had it entitled The Ubiquitous Shiva. This is the second volume of the Shiva Drishti. I thought I would, if anyone wants to see it. There's a paperback version as well as a hardback. What's on the screen is the same as the handout. And I'm not going to read out this abstract or anything like that. But I am going to go through some of these points and try and just give you a general view of how this non-dualist philosopher Somananda argues at quite at length, in fact, with Nyayika and Vaisheshika dualist Hindu counterparts. Of course, there are lots of schools of Hindu philosophy, as we all know, and they didn't always see eye to eye. And Somananda, unlike the authors who come after him, Utpaladeva and Abhinavagupta, Somananda penned a lot of criticisms of this dualist school. So what I've given you in the first item here on the handout and on the screen is just a kind of chart of some of the major thinkers and authors of this Pratibhigya, or recognition school of philosophy, the founding author of whom is my person I've worked on all these last 20 years, Somananda, who wrote this text entitled The Shiva Drishti. You can see a kind of elaboration of the history of the tradition. What really happened here is people stopped really using and reading the Shiva Drishti after Utpaladeva, Somananda's student, wrote these Karikas, and especially using Abhinavagupta's Ishvara Pratibhigya Vimarshini, people did not so much go back to the Shiva Drishti. One problem that we have is that we don't really have commentary on the Shiva Drishti after the middle of the fourth Ajnika, or chapter out of seven. So most of what I'm going to show you today is from the part of the text for which we no longer have a commentary any longer. One bit will have the commentary and the rest won't. Also, you'll see I have this in this chart here, this Shiva Drishti Alochana. Would have been lovely to have it. This is Abhinavagupta's commentary on his great grand guru's text, but unfortunately it's lost except for a few short quotations. I used to say the same thing about the Vivriti, but in recent years, Raffaella Torella and Isabel Ratier have found a number of fragments, some of them quite substantial, some of them enough to make a whole book of the Vivriti. Utpaladeva wrote two auto-commentaries on his Karikas. The arguments all that I have, and if I have a thesis really for today, it's that Somananda deploys ontological arguments to criticize epistemological approaches and questions and problems of his interlocutors. He really is an ontologist at the end of the day. And I've put that into print, arguing that Somananda is fundamentally concerned with ontology, and I think that holds up here in this section. But more generally, what I want to do today is just share these arguments against Nyayika and Vaisheshika positions. I've never presented these in public before. And before I did this work for the second volume of Shivadrishti, no comment in print has been made by anyone about these passages I'm about to show you. With one exception, there are one or two short sentences about the last passage of the text that I want to look at with us today. In that last passage, there's the term pratyabhijñāna, which of course is very, very similar to pratibhijja, and that's the name of the school. And there's a question of what this means in Somananda's text. And if I don't ruin my talk by telling you the end of the talk at the beginning, I think that he is really arguing fundamentally with the Nyaya, with the Nyayika, when he uses the term pratibhijñāna, and not with the Buddhist epistemologists, as has been in this one sentence that's been written about this before, assumed that it was the Buddhists. So what Somananda is going to do is deal with the classical non-dualist approach to things, which is to say that if you, the opponent, takes a dualist perspective, you have the fundamental problem of explaining how dissimilar or unlike things can interact and communicate with one another. If you have something that's, as it were, non-material or has no form, or is in the form of consciousness, those aren't the same thing, but they're related, then how does it make connection to or contact with or interact with things that are external to consciousness, that are material, that are physical, that have a form? And he's going to prosecute these arguments and push against those problems in various ways. So I want to look at two different kind of arguments. The first is on sleep, and then the second one really fundamentally deals with this question of the terms are murtatva and amurtatva, having a form, the fact of having a form, or the fact of not having a form. But in the first section, I want to deal with an interesting argument on sleep. And as I said, I'm going to point to these passages of text, but I'm not going to go into them in detail because I don't want to take up the whole hour and more. But I did want to give you the information so that, you know, you can ask pointed questions or use it to fall asleep tonight or whatever. But the first thing I wanted to just briefly mention, in case some of you aren't familiar with Nyaya and Vaisheshika view of the perceptual process, they're dualists, so they think the world external to consciousness is different from the awareness that knows it. So there are objects in the world separate and existent, ontologically existent, apart from our knowing them. I think this is a pretty reasonable thing to think, but it does break down when you really try and work on it. So what I've first given you here are just some of the kind of classic lines from the Nyaya Sutra and Vaisheshika Sutra expressing this idea of how perception works. And the idea is that there's a knower, or an Atman, in the Nyaya school that knows objects in the world. And the way that things in the world can be known is that there are sense organs, indriyas, that make contact with things in the world, arthas, and that contact, you know, like touch, taste, smell, sight, hearing, right? That's five. Those contacts with the objects of sense produces a kind of, as it were, mechanical or material result that's witnessed by a manas, a mind or a center of awareness that is also material, that in turn is witnessed by the Atman, and then that Atman can know the content of the result of that indriyarta sannikarsha, that close connection of sense organ and sense object. So you have the Atman as the knower, the manas in between as an intermediary that captures the manas, the attention of the organ of sense making contact with the objects that are known. So this involves two steps, because in Nyaya and Vaisheshika thought, cognitions are not aware of themselves. There has to be an awareness of them by another. So first manas knows the material process of seeing, and then Atman knows the content of the mind, if you like, the manas, and then comes to know what it is that's out there in the world. Two steps. So I've just given you some classic places where that basic system is described here in these handout item number two. And can we leave... Well, there's an interesting bit here that I'll just read out this bit of Vatsyayana's commentary. because it deals with this first argument. There's mention in Nyaya Sutra 114 of the contact of the sense organ and object, and not the contact of the Atman and the Manas, for this following reason. Sometimes one who, having resolved to awaken at a particular hour, has fallen asleep, awakens by the force of that resolution. We've all done that, right? You try and wake up, and you do. But when a loud sound or forcible touch, someone shakes you awake, is what causes one to awaken, then the awakening awareness that arises for the one who had fallen asleep is caused by the contact of the sense organ, the ear or the skin, with the object, you know. And in such an instance, the contact of the cognizer and the manas is not primary. What is it then? It's the contact of the indriya, or the sense organ, and the arta, of the object. For it's not the case that the... Sorry. This is a bit gerrymandered, or jury-rigged, rather. Maybe it's gerrymandered also. That the Atman desires to know in such an instance, such that by its efforts it will impel the manas to act at that time. So what he's saying here is, look, when the manas is being made aware of things in the world, but the Atman is what directs the manas and says, hey, tell me what there is to see there, tell me what there is to hear there, tell me what there is to smell here. And if we think about our perceptual life, it is true, right, that we generally see or hear or smell or touch or taste and are aware of those one at a time in a serial way. And that's a big argument that the Nyayayikas use to prove that there has to be a manas as an intermediate step between the self who knows and the things that are known. Because you have a sorting of this thing. If you think about it, you really have to decide to think what this room smells like right now. Not too bad. So, right, but normally we don't notice. That's because the Atman is not making contact with the manas, impelling the manas to go to the organ of smell rather than the organ of hearing or sight. So it's one at a time. But if you're asleep, how can the Atman tell the manas to do anything at all? You're unconscious. And this is the argument that Somananda takes up. And this is item number 3. Somananda argues that his dualist opponents cannot explain how it is that a sound or similar stimuli could awaken one who is in a deep sleep. For there's no awareness in deep sleep on the part of the Atman, such that the Atman would impel the manas to deliver awareness of the same to it. Does this make sense? I'm not going to read the Sanskrit out. I did want to give it to you, as I said, so that you have the evidence. This is almost in the fourth Akmika, fourth chapter, these verses 64 and so on. We're almost to the last point where there's any commentary on the Shivdrishti. I did spell out in nice manageable chunks here the commentary of Utpaladeva on this passage so that you could pick out the bits of the argument really quickly and easily. And I hate when there's a huge block quotation and you have to work your way back and forth to the translation. Although sometimes that's unavoidable. So I just wanted to briefly read out this part here. To explain further, if one is joined to the awareness of the loud sound or the like prior to awakening from deep sleep, so if the Atman is joined to that thing out there in the world before he wakes up, then that's just the waking state. So it can't be that he's connected already to these things and then directs the manas to act, because that's the waking state. There has to be some difference in sleep where you're not connected and you're in a passive state, and you're not telling the manas what to do. But on the other hand, how could you be awoken if the cause, a prior awareness of the loud sound and the like, were found wanting, if it were not available? So if you're connected to it, there's the problem that you can't distinguish the difference between being awake and not. And if you're not connected to it, there's the problem that you couldn't wake up at all. Am I making sense? What he's saying is you have an Atman who directs the manas to do things so that you're aware of your objects of sense. That's the Nyayika core position and Vaisheshika. And Somananda's saying, and Alex already knows because he's written about this, that the Nyayikas have a good answer to this problem, which I've included. We'll talk about that in a second. But what Somananda's saying is, hey, you have this world divided up into different types of things. An amurta, a non-formed, non-material, if you like, Atman, and then a material, you know, like modern science thinks the eye is an instrument that has the cones and rods and whatever's in it that actually register physical stimuli from the world, and then, you know, you have an awareness of that phenomenon, and then you come to know that this is a white and blue bottle in front of me, like that. And Somananda is saying, but you tell us that it's the Atman that tells the manas to focus on seeing rather than hearing. But when they're asleep, it can't make the focus. So then how does it wake up? You know, if you're there's a loud noise or you're shaken, how do you hear or feel the touch? Well, if you feel it already and then the Atman goes, hey, pay attention to that, so that you wake up, well, then that's the waking state. The Atman's not passive. If you can't make that contact, then you can't wake up at all. That's the argument. So I wanted to then give you in this last part of the item number 3, up here at the top of the page, I gave this quotation here of the last part of Utpaladeva's commentary, and I'll just read it out quickly. He says, this alone must be the case when knowledge is unitary, vidyaikatve. This cause of the waking can be nothing but the procedure of the non-cognition of Shiva nature. So you fail to see Shiva nature. The state of deep sleep is interrupted when a severe noise, for example, for its part unexpected, impels one to obscure one's awareness of non-dual Shiva nature. And therefore we ask, this mere procedure could not be contradicted. Could be contradicted how? And since it is proven by a valid means of knowing, we ask, is it not conclusive? And how is it? Would it not be conclusive? And I wanted to just highlight these little bits for two reasons. One is that this Shivatva Akhyati, or what he more commonly writes as Abheda Akhyati, the non-cognition of Shiva nature, or the non-cognition of non-duality, is how Utpaladeva explains the appearance of multiplicity in what is ultimately a non-dual world. He says that the fully aware state is the deep sleep. When you're fully, there's complete non-differentiation because you're, as it were, totally awake to Shiva's identity of everything. And the waking state is actually a diminishment of your awareness. And it's diminished by way of only seeing parts of Shiva. So you don't see the full Shiva nature or the full non-duality. You only see a part of it, and that remedies the problem he sees in the Nyaya view, because you're totally awake when you're asleep, and you're only partially asleep when you're awake. So there's no problem of a lack of will on the part of the agent sleeping, because that agent can do whatever he wants. In fact, that's what Shiva does to create the world. That's the argument. But I wanted to mention it because I was asked to speak on the 29th briefly. You're speaking too, we're together at that time. And this is the phenomenon, this is the argument around causality that they make. And so I want to highlight that. I'm going to talk about all the details of that later on. The second thing is I put in bold, iticha paroktam kuta pramanat siddham iticha nanishchayakam katam, because that passage is the product of reading lots of manuscripts and finding out that the published edition has a little tiny mistake in it. And I'm going to be talking about only four examples of critical editing on Tuesday in this graduate Indology seminar, but I'll briefly talk about this example. So that's a way of saying that I'll follow up on these things later on. And now, I might have to speed up a little, but or we just won't do everything. But I wanted to go to the second part. Later in the text, later in the fourth Athmika, Somananda really digs in detail into the arguments that the Nyayikas and Vaisheshikas make. And he's really looking at Nyaya Sutras and Vaisheshika Sutras here. And what he's saying here again is two unlike things can't connect. The amurta Atman cannot connect to the material or things that have a form out there in the world. So what he's really saying is that certain of the categories of existent things that we have that have form, like wind, water, fire, earth and the manas they have form, or our murta, have a problem connecting up with the Atman that has no form. So in item 4, what have I done? I've given you some of these classic quotations again that talk about this kind of binary between phenomena in the world, and I'm quoting Prashastapada's Padartha Dharma Samgraha, which I think Somananda knew, and some other works there. Okay, so let me go to item 5. I'm sorry, the screen. Most people... if you're one of the only people who didn't get a handout and you want one, just let me know and I'll email it to you. But let's look at these arguments, a few of them here, in the next few minutes. Okay, no problem. I won't go over. So the first one is at Shivadrishti 4.100 CD to 101. And not to be pedantic, but I wanted to point this out because this is a little bit of a detail in, you know, some of you have published books, some of you are working on your books. This is the kind of little detail that comes out when you do close study. Actually, in the Kashmir series of texts and studies edition of the Shivadrishti, for some reason there's a misprint, and it counts verse 4.70 as 4.70, and then it counts verse 4.71 as 4.70 again. So from there to the end of the chapter, it's all just off by one number. So, I mean, who cares? But it happened, and that's the kind of little thing you find when you do study, you know, study. So I want to mention it. So in this 100 to 101, 100, second half of the verse to 101, these are by my enumeration, he makes this argument. There can be no connection of that which has no form, or is amurta, with that which has a form, or is murta. Is this okay? Yeah, is it not too... this is interesting? Okay, good. The Atman on the... don't want to bore people. The Atman on the Nyaya Vaisheshika view is amurta, and the Indriyas are murta, and the Manas is murta as well. And Somananda argues that this means the Atman could not cause them to deliver a cognitive awareness to itself, to the Atman, because none like entity cannot reach what is qualitatively different from it in order to impel it to act. And that's really all he says in these verses here, in this verse and a half here, so I'm not going to read it out. The Atman's just qualitatively different in this dualist view from the instruments in this two-step part of cognition that deliver information to it. So how can they hook up? I think this is the classical fundamental problem of dualist schools. How do unlike things meet themselves? How does spirit and matter interrelate? Of course, the fundamental problem of non-dualist schools is, if everything's one thing, why doesn't it look that way? Because it sure doesn't. And so each philosophical tradition in these two kind of ontological views has a fundamental challenge to deal with. And as I said at the beginning, I think Somananda is an ontologist, and he really leans into this view and goes through arguing against different schools, Mimamsa, Nyaya Vaisheshika, a little bit Sankhya, the Buddhist epistemologist Dharmakirti. And he's always saying against these schools, if you just accepted Shaiva non-dualism, the rest of your rationale would work. You can have indriyas and artas and a manas and all of that, but if you really just think it's all Shiva deep down, then the mechanism works. But if you don't, how do they connect up? They can't. Is that okay? Okay, so that's the first one. Basically, two different things cannot connect. That's item 5. Now, item 6... Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped something. First, I wanted to mention that this problem of awareness in sleep is solved in the Nyaya and Vaisheshika view. And I've given you in footnote 2 a long footnote that gives their explanation of it. And I don't want to go into Vatsyayana's Nyaya Sutra Bhasha here, where the explanation is given, but the short answer is that no, the Atman does not do anything to wake up the Nyayika individual, because there's sleep involved or deep distraction of the mind. Those are the two examples they gave. However, there's something called adrishta, that which hasn't been seen. And that is a karmic force that exists in the universe from the beginning of time. Alex, you probably know more about this than I do, but it's somewhat God-driven, such that you can have a beginning of the impelling of the activity of the universe, of the elements, and so on. And this can course through individuals due to karmic, past karmic consequences and histories, such that the waking up can be done by this phenomenon of adrishta. I also wanted to draw your attention to that long footnote, because in preparing for today, I came across Alex's article contrasting Nyaya Vaisheshika and Buddhist explanations of attention, and he deals precisely with this issue. Alas, I'm sorry, I didn't cite you in the book because I didn't know about this. I cited the other things of yours, but I owe you. So I wanted to at least correct it here and give Alex his due, because he's already dealt with this issue. Okay, so I would love to know what Somananda thought of adrishta. And he's a pretty good philosopher, and he's read other people, and he knows stuff, but he didn't address that issue. I think it's a cop-out, you know, but there we are, whatever. Everybody has to do these little fudges, and the Shaivas do it too, dealing with their fundamental ontological problem. But let's go on to these murta and amurta stuff in item number 6. Item number 5 said the Atman cannot be the impeller. It can't say, hey, Manas, retrieve seeing for me, because it can't connect to the Manas, which is formed, it's murta, when it's of the opposite ontological quality or category. Item number 6 says it can't be the cause, yes, and in addition, because of the ontological dualism, it couldn't even know any of the objects that comes to it at all. And what he's saying here in item number 6, and let me now go to the next page of my handout. I'm sorry, I usually just use paper, but I wanted to also have it on the screen for those who like that. So basically, he says at the end of this argument, why would the mere connection of the sense organ, and he talks about the akshagrama here, which is a term you have elsewhere in Vaisheshika and certain Vaisheshika texts, how would these sense organs and the object, this is indriyarta sannikarsha, how could this connection of these two things, sense organs and object, cause the knower to exert himself? Okay. How, when the connection has been produced of one entity, is another entity the knower? So the indriya makes the connection. How does the Atman become the knower? Well, item number 7 starts to give the answer. And the first line there is really rather interesting. It says, manaso binna kala tvat smriti jnanam atochyate. So, atta, the objection of the opponent comes. It may be said that the cognition that is memory is due to the fact that the manas is present in different moments of time. So what he's saying here really is two things. Somananda is successfully reproducing what a Nyayika or a Vaisheshika would want to say, which is the Atman can be the knower of what the Indriya presents because there's this intermediary called the Manas. Is that okay? Yeah. And the Manas does some special things. When you have a vision of something like a bottle and then it's subsequently no longer in sight, and then you have a memory cognition, you remember the bottle, well, the indriya-artha connection is not there. Your eye is no longer seeing the bottle. Okay, no problem. You can still remember it. You have some scar, an impression from the previous one, and you have a special kind of contact, Nyayikas and Vaisheshikas say, between the Atman and the Manas. The Atman connects with the mind, which was there at the minute of the cognition, And is there at the minute of the memory, subsequently, two different moments of time, and stores in it, as it were, a kind of awareness. The connection allows the awareness that, I remember that bottle I saw. So here he's successfully saying, hey, the opponent might say, it's not just the Indriya and the Atman, the Manas is in between. So then Somananda says, all right, but then we're talking about a process. There has to be a process in this. It has earlier moments and later moments. There have to be steps along the way and to end up having a final kind of result from this process of perception. After all, Nayaikas Vaisheshikas, you have two steps in your cognition. Okay, fine. So what do we know when this goes through? So your sense organ, the eye, sees a bottle. The manas is directed to, hey, manas, tell me about that bottle. And then the manas delivers the product of that contact to the Atman, and then the Atman knows what? Can it know the thing that the bottle's made out of, the substance? So Mananda says, you can't do that, because by your own ontology, the bottle is of one type of phenomenon. It's one type of dravya or substance of a certain set of qualities that are incompatible with the Atman that's another type of dravya or substance with other kinds of qualities. So the svarupata, the very nature of that object, cannot be delivered to the Atman because the thing that is that dravya can't subsist inside the Atman because it's an ontologically different category. Okay, says the, you don't have to believe it, because I think there are easy ways around that for these guys, but that's his argument. Okay, says the Nayayika Vaisheshika opponent, well, how about then that we don't imagine that the substance, as it were, enters into the knowledge of the Atman, but it becomes aware, it knows the qualities that inhere in that. So you'll, many or some of you or all of you will know that Nayayikas and Vaisheshikas, especially since Prashastapada with the Purata Dharma Sangraha, we have this articulation of six kinds of things in the world, and there are substances or, you know, realia, and then there are qualities to those substances. But not every quality can inhere in every substance. So color cannot inhere in the ether, which is colorless. For example. So the opponent says, okay, well, if they're ontologically different, at least their qualities can be communicated, if not them themselves. And Somananda answers, and this is in this really kind of almost haiku-like Sanskrit. I took out the rest of it for you, or for me, and show you how I see this argument being made in this really compacted way. Rupam chet. If the opponent says the form, I actually think this means rupa guna adi. It means the quality of a thing, color and so on. That's what gets known by the Atman. Then the response is, how is it katam that a quality can be of a thing possessing that quality of the gunan can be brought to the Atman? The Atman is amurta. It's im without form. And it can't take in things like color and other qualities that can only inhere in certain of the substances. There are nine dravyas, five of them are material, or murta, and four of them are space, time, the ether, and the Atman are without materiality. So we have a category problem at the level of qualities, just as we had a category problem at the level of substances. They can't cross the ontological line. Okay. Then, in between, there are a whole set of arguments where Somananda asks, and it's really brilliant, but I'm already talking a little too long, so I'm going to finish in a minute, where Somananda goes through a whole set of arguments about how it is that an erroneous cognition could occur. How could I see this as a green bottle instead of a white and whatever bottle? How could I think that I saw that? And he has all kinds of art, but left him out for time. But here in item number 9, Somananda asked what I think is actually a reasonable question for the Nyayikas, which is, how, if you have a two-step process of cognition, how is it that the Atman would know what there is to ask the... In item number 9, long and the short of it, he says, look, if the Atman doesn't know the thing in the world until it's delivered by way of directing the Manas to tell it about it, then how would it know what there is to tell it to know about? It would have to have some sense of things in the world to say, hey, Manas, I want to smell more, you know, that kind of thing. I prefer this versus that. So he's basically saying, if it already knows what's out there in the world, then the system breaks down. And if it doesn't already know what's out there in the world, the system never started in the first place. Okay, now, the very last passage is actually just slightly mysterious still to me, but it also, I think, is a really interesting capper to this whole long section of about 20-some-odd verses that argue against Nyayika and Vaisheshika positions. And what he says here is, and also due to the connection with memory. And it is thus that one must understand the Shaiva reality, what is a complete unity, to have been proven, this in consequence of the cognition that is memory as well. And I guess for the sake of argument here, all I really want to say is that he's using the term pratibhijana, which means a kind of recognition where you say this perception here is like the one that I had before. This is that very one from before. I recognize that A and B are similar, are related, that the memory of the pot and the vision of the pot initially are this is that very pot that I saw before. That's the memory cognition. And in order to say that cognition A, the perception, and cognition B, the recollection of that, are the same, what I think Somananda is here doing is arguing that what you really need is an underlying unity of consciousness, not just a mere substratum in the Atman that connects those two things up by co-locating them, because they would still be mutually distinct. This, as I said, has been taken as an argument perhaps, and there's still a slight argument about how it could be, against the Buddhists, but we have the Somananda questioning here in the last few lines, questioning his opponent as to whether they think the two cognitions are made one, are unified or not, and the response is that they are made one, a Buddhist would never say that. So I think this is a capper on the arguments he makes against the Nyayikas, saying that your ontology doesn't even work, even at the level of the Atman, even though it's one location for two cognitions. There would be mutually distinct and separate cognitions, unless there could be a consciousness that could be commingled. That's the best I've done with that. And just based on how he deals with the opponent's argument and has the opponents suggest that there's an aikya to these two things, I think it has to be the Nyayika Vaisheshika, which is to say that Somananda is saying the pratisandhana that's talked about in Nyaya Sutra Bhashya and elsewhere is not the same as the anusandhana of the Shaiva view that allows for full unification of awareness, even though Utpaladeva and Abhinavagupta say it is, because they don't want to fight with the Nyayikas. So that's a little bit, in a way, a historical argument rather than a philosophical one. There's a lot of stuff in the footnotes and so on that may or may not be of interest or use. I tried to make it accurate and useful. I wanted to give you a handout because I think it's nice to get one when you go to a talk. I did leave at least a little bit of time for questions, so I didn't totally blow it. Thank you very much. Thank you.